Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 93 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we find out some behind-the-scenes gossip about being a pet sitter.
Now, he was actually told by the client that this dog liked to sleep in the bedroom, which he had no problem with at all. But when the dog proceeded to climb into bed with him, I think he felt that was a little bit too much.
Plus, we have the Dogcast Radio news, and I'll be talking about why dogs don't understand crying wolf. But before all that, the loss of a pet can be devastating. I discovered my next guest, Nadine M. Rosin, author of The Healing Art of Pet Parenthood, through her blog, where she makes the wonderful offer of grief counselling to all who are mourning a pet, on a donation basis, if necessary. She also offers holistic consultation, because when her beloved dog, Buttons, became ill, it spurred her to take action. Now she's on a mission to share what she learned with other pet owners. And it all started with Buttons.
Buttons and I were partners for 19 years. She was a Cockapoo Terrier. We met when she was 8 weeks old. Aww. She was actually a birthday gift from my cousin. Mm. And I describe all of that in the book. And it was one of those situations, Julie, that I'm sure you've experienced, and I'm sure that many, many of your listeners have also experienced, which was that Buttons actually picked me much more than my picking her.
Mm.
And there was no doubt in my mind. We were in a room full of puppies. I tell the story in the book of how she burrowed herself up the sleeve of my jacket. And when I walked away to go look at some of the other dogs that were there, she just sat there and whined and cried and whined. And so it was quite obvious that she was the one that was supposed to come home with me.
Oh, isn't it funny? They do pick you, because when we went to look for Buddy, there was a litter of black Labradors, and they were tiny little things. And he came over and sat very squarely on my mum's foot and just sat there and sort of went, well, you know, I'm the one, thank you. And all the others, when we picked them up, they squirmed and wriggled, and we picked him up, and he would just lie there and go, yep, I'm with you.
They have a wonderful, beautiful way of communicating to us, and it's in a much more direct way than we as human beings tend to communicate with one another. And, you know, I often say when I do a lot of speaking at groups for fundraisers for different animal organizations around the country, and I always say in the talk, I really believe that they're like furry Buddhas walking around, and or four-legged bodhisattvas or apostles, because they really embody the best of our humanity. And when we stop and we listen and give them that respect, it is amazing what they can teach us and what we can learn from them.
Yeah.
So I think that's a wonderful example. You know, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily be sensitive enough that when the one black lab out of the litter came over and sat on your foot, that they would take that as, you know, something that the dog itself was communicating.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that the beautiful thing with animals is they don't do that thing of, but if I say that, what will they think or what will they do? Or, you know, they just go, hey, I love you, I'm here. You know,
and life is fun, and let's enjoy the moment, and this is now, and yes, absolutely. They have so much to teach us, and a large part of my book, The Healing Art of Pet Parenthood, is about the natural progression of lessons that I learned from Buttons. We went through so much together. I never had human children. She was what I consider my adopted daughter. And when she was 8 years old, she was diagnosed with cancer and given 6 weeks to live. And so at that point, our communication deepened even more. I had to become ultra, ultra sensitive to what her, you know, what she was feeling, what her needs were, all those kinds of things. And so as a result, I grew deeply as a human being.
Yeah.
It's just amazing to me what, especially for me, dogs have to teach us.
Absolutely. Now, as you say, you were very, very close, and, you know, she was your child. So that must have been absolutely devastating. But you chose to turn it round. You didn't just give up, did you?
No, I was lucky enough to have been raised in a household during the 50s and 60s that where my father was very much into alternative medicine. Now, I know in other parts of the world, alternative medicine is, I believe, more easily embraced than it is here in the States. And so I wasn't one of these people who automatically believed that just because the vet or a doctor tells me that means that's the end-all word.
Oh.
And so when the vet, who I had a lot of respect for the veterinarian that we went to, he initially wasn't even going to do a biopsy. I found this big, ugly, red, horned, rimmed tumor on her tail, as big as my finger.
Oh.
I describe all this in the book.
Yeah.
And I immediately took her in for a biopsy. And because she was already 8 years old, the vet's advice initially was, don't waste the money on a biopsy. This is she's an old dog. She's a senior dog. This is some kind of a crazy cell growth, probably, just like when an older person gets like a crazy toenail or something. And I really don't think you should waste the money on a biopsy. And I explained to him, well, she's like my daughter. And if she were human, you wouldn't, you know, forego the biopsy. You would absolutely have the biopsy. So please do that. And he said he would call me as soon as he got the results. Well, the lab actually did the test twice because the results were so devastating. And what it was squamous cell carcinoma. And the vet immediately called and said, you need to get her in here within 48 hours and have the tail amputated, start her on chemotherapy and radiation, or she'll be dead in 6 weeks. The reason being, he said, was that I just lopped the tumor off its skin level, and there's all those cancer cells underneath the skin level that are now in the process of traveling to her kidneys, and once they reach the kidneys, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't an easy decision for me, even though I had a background in alternative medicine. You know, it's difficult when you go up against someone trained and what the mainstream opinion is. But after much soul searching, which I also tell the story of that process in the book, I knew that the only way for me to help Buttons was to do what I felt best doing, which was to take a holistic approach. Now, most people assume that that means you just start immediately treating the symptoms, the cancer, with natural remedies and herbs instead of chemotherapy and radiation. What I knew that what it means really is addressing the cause. And so in the case of Buttons and her cancer, the first thing I did with the help of some holistic animal practitioners was change her food. I took her off of commercial dog food. And of course, you know, that's something a lot of people these days know to do. They're like, well, of course, you know, there've been all these recalls. They're not good ingredients. In many countries, the food isn't regulated for pets. But this Buttons got the cancer back in the early 90s. So that kind of information wasn't as prevalent. I took her off of commercial food and started cooking organic food at home for her. The other thing I did was I went around the house and I took away everything that could even possibly remotely be responsible for creating a burden on her immune system. Things that a lot of people don't even think about these days. For instance, plug-in air fresheners, dryer sheets, for laundered, you know, bedding and things that the dog is exposed to all the time.
Oh.
Different chemicals that, you know, we use to clean our rugs.
Oh.
These things are filled with chemicals that you can go online, Julie, and with a little research, find out all kinds of studies and things that are in existence about how the ingredients in a lot of these products cause organ failure and brain problems and all kinds of horrendous things. And, you know, it's so easy for us to assume if we can go to the grocery store and purchase it that it's safe. You know, our world is more built, you know, commerce and industry is much more built on the bottom line.
Yeah, that's awful.
You know, is the company going to make money? And not so much on 20 years from now, how is this going to affect people? Well, you know, our bodies can take abuse. We can drink alcohol and smoke and eat junk food and all that kind of thing for 30, 40, 50 years before our bodies retaliate. But a dog or a cat, of course, their immune system can only take that for maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 years before it retaliates. So after I cleared out, you know, I changed her bowls, no more plastic. I got rid of the microwave. I stopped using dryer sheets and non-natural laundry detergent. I started cleaning with vinegar instead of, you know, the products that I, you know, would normally get at the grocery store. I stopped using any kind of air fresheners. And then I put her on different herbal combinations that were formulated especially specifically to cleanse her body of the residual toxins. So basically, those are the three steps of the holistic approach that I used, which were, number one, to clear her environment of all toxins, to cleanse her body of all residual toxins, and thirdly, to strengthen her body nutritionally so that it could do what the body does the best, which is heal itself. You know, our natural tendency of our bodies is that of health. And not disease. And so when you take away any reason for disease, I think the body tends to really regenerate and keep itself strong and healthy. So the bottom line was 4 months after this program, and it was an involved program, the first couple of months, every few hours, I was squirting something in her mouth. And I describe all this in the book. It's, you know, and it's all told first person as a story. It's not a reference book on holistic medicine. It's just our story, Buttons's and my story. But 4 months into the program, she was declared cancer-free. The cancer never came back. And she thrived for an additional 11 years.
Oh, that is brilliant, isn't it?
She passed away in my arms exactly 1 week before her 19th birthday of old age.
Now, that's a tremendous age to reach.
And, you know, if you think about it, years and years ago when we were kids, it wasn't unusual to hear of people or to know people or to actually be someone who had a dog who lived to be 17, 18, 19, 20. But now...
No, you don't hear it, do you?
Now you don't hear... Now if a dog ends up being 12 years old, everyone's going, oh, wow, that's incredible. And it really... And I think personally, my personal opinion is it has a whole lot to do with the chemicals that we're bombarding their immune systems with, not to mention our own, and the food, the quality of the food that we feed them. So I think that there's a whole lot we can do to, you know, help and support our animals in being around, living again until the late teens and early 20s that 50 years ago they were living to that age.
So, I mean, obviously that's as you say, there's a wonderful story to read yours and Button's story in there. But there's a very strong message to all of us dog owners that you can do the same for your dog.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, and I'm certainly not trying to preach in any way, shape, or form, because there were times that I was asleep myself to what I was doing and giving her and exposing her to, even after the whole cancer incident. There was a time where we were living in Northern California and with other people, and there were cats on the property. And so there was a rather serious flea issue. And instead of doing the things that I knew I could do that were natural, things with different essential oils and making a tincture of from boiling lemon rind, and just very non-harmful, gentle things that can get rid of fleas, or cedar chips in the bedding, things like that. These are all natural ways. You know, what did I do? I did the stupid, easy thing. I went and got the flea medication that you put on their shoulder blades once a month. And, you know, that's really a harmful, harmful thing. I mean, it kills the fleas because it's a poison. And when you're putting that on your animal month after month after month, guess what it's doing to your animal?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I am just as guilty as any other pet parent of you know, not being conscious and aware and taking the easy way out instead of actually thinking about what I'm doing and what I'm exposing the animal to. So, yes, it's all my story, and I'm just as human and flawed as any other pet parent. But there is a message. Yeah, the message is, hey, let's wake up here and look what we're doing, because, you know, you have dogs. Mm. They are easier to love than any human being you've ever known. Why? Mm. Because they're totally connected to that unconditional love.
Yeah.
And like you say, they never communicate in ways that are non-direct.
Yeah.
And so we feel an immeasurable loss when they're no longer in our lives. And there are things we can do to keep them in our lives, not only keep them in our lives, but keep them really healthy and thriving and happy for a lot longer.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that this book will go a long way to creating that situation for many, many pet parents. You know, one of my favorite emails that I've received from a reader was from a woman who said that her grown sons did nothing but make fun of her after her dog, who was a Bichon, by the way, passed away.
Oh.
And their attitude was, oh, mom, just get another dog, blah, blah, blah. I mean, why are you going through all this about this dog? Well, she read my book, and the last third of my book is everything I went through after Buttons passed away, because I really felt that needed to be addressed, because I too had to put up with a lot of people not understanding how devastated I was.
Yeah.
And this woman said that she went on to Amazon and she had a copy of the book shipped to each one of her sons, and said, do me a favor and read this book. And if you read this book, I promise I won't ever talk about, you know, the dog again.
Aww.
Well, the boys read the book and immediately, you know, upon finishing, called their mom and just apologizing profusely. Aww. Mom, we didn't understand, but now we do.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? Good for her, because I think there are people who feel ashamed of that grief. I mean, I have always, I suppose I'm an emotional person, and I've never sort of questioned, should I be feeling this or should I be feeling this? You know, I kind of, that's how I feel. I'm going to let you know that's how I feel, you know, and that's how I am. So, you know, I've mourned my animals and never even thought, should I be, you know, grieving this dramatically for an animal? It's never crossed my mind because they were my animal and I loved them, you know? And so good for her, because it does need people that have been through that to say to people that turned around with the, you know, well, you could get another dog. There is no one else in your life. You wouldn't just turn around and say, well, you can find another man. You know, you can find another woman, you can find another daughter. So there's no one else that you would do that with. So why do it about an animal?
I asked that exact same question in the book. I say, you know, I listed some of the things that people who knew me well and knew the bond that Buttons and I shared, some of the things they said were like a bucket of ice water in my face. And I knew that their intention was good. I knew that their intention was to provide comfort or, you know, to see me out of pain instead of in such pain. But I, at the same time, thought, you know, if my 19-year-old human daughter had just died, they wouldn't be saying this to me.
No.
And that's another reason why I wrote the book, Julie. I read every book I could find at the time on pet loss, and none of them spoke to the depth of pain that I was feeling. And most of them had the attitude, you know, yes, you're going to be grieving a lot for 2 or 3 months, and then you'll start considering getting another dog. And, you know, I couldn't even wrap my mind around that after 19 years with this soul who I felt so connected to and still felt connected to after, you know, she had discarded her body, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then I started going, so then I started reading books written by people who had lost human children. And those books and the things they were going through and the things they talked about spoke much more directly to what I was feeling emotional. But of course, none of them addressed the issue that you just brought up, which was other people saying things like, well, it's just a dog. What are you, you know, what are you going through? It didn't deal with any of those issues. So then I started searching online. And of course, I found, you know, many, many websites dealing with pet loss, and was really surprised to find all these tributes that pet parents had written on these sites, especially a lot of them from men, saying things like, you know, to their dogs, dear Skipper, it's been 10 years since you died. I still miss you every day. I'm so happy to finally find a place where I can say that.
Yeah.
And when I started reading those, Julie, I realized, you know, I think there are all these grieving pet parents in the closet.
Yeah.
And I want us to come out.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Do you know, another thing that I think your book, another area that it enables people to sort of stand up and say, no, actually, and straight from the title, pet, parenthood, because, you know, I mean, it's sort of very much looked down upon if you say, if you refer to yourself as, you know, mum or dad with the dog, there is this going, oh, you know, but you are very much in the position of being a parent. So it's natural that you assume that, you know, I have no problem at all with that. In fact, I've written about it and sort of, you know, I am my dog's mom. Because that's what I do. I nurture him. I look after him. I chauffeur him round. You know, I take him for walks. I look after, you know, his training, his education. You know, I do all the things that a mum does with a child. So what's the problem with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the mind might know the difference, but the heart does not. And the other thing, you know, a point that I know we've shared from things I've read that you've written and that I've also written in the book is, you know, had I given birth to a human daughter who for some reason, you know, due to some genetic issue or some anomaly was unable to communicate with words, I think our relationship would have been very similar to what, you know, my relationship was with Buttons.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it's, it really is, I'm hoping that when the book is read by enough people that there is a shift in the way other people look at people who love their animals deeply and dearly.
Yeah, I hope so too. You, if anyone's listening to this and they are, you know, in need of talking things through, you do offer counseling, don't you?
Yes, I am an ordained non-denominational minister, and I certainly have experience being a pet parent. Through my blog, which is petparenthood.blogspot.com, I offer 30-minute, 45-minute, or 60-minute consultations for people who either want to go through over the phone with me, go through their household with a fine-tooth comb and make sure that they're not exposing their pet to anything that they might not realize could be highly toxic to the pet. And we talk about food and all those other things. The other type of consultation that I offer is the grief consultation. And, you know, I think it's really important to have someone who truly, truly understands the depth of your grief and can validate that and help acknowledge that for you. I also have several different tools or rituals, whatever word you're most comfortable with, that I can share with people that I discovered and created through my grieving process with buttons that I found incredibly healing and, you know, would just help me cope. Because usually when you're going through this, I mean, you can't just take a vacation for 6 months and go heal somewhere. Most people aren't in a position to do that. And so a lot of these tools that I can discuss with people, I think help them, if nothing else, just being able to continue functioning in their family life and work and everything, while at the same time honoring and healing what's going on, not just stuffing those feelings in. Because that's probably the most toxic thing we expose ourselves to, you know, our toxic emotions. In fact, I also talk about in the book how what happened to me emotionally just prior to Buttons developing the cancer. And I would not be surprised at all if a lot of the reason why she got the cancer was because I was going through such devastating negative emotions at the time. Mm-hmm. And I also want to point out, and thanks for bringing that up about the consultations, that there's a PayPal, you know, thing on the blog that, you know, people can click into, and then we set up the appointment and all that. But I only charge a set fee for the 45 and 60 minute consultations. I don't want anyone, especially if they're grieving the loss of a pet, to not take advantage of the consultation because of finances. So, although there is a suggested donation for the 30-minute consultation, I will take whatever someone is able to pay so that it's available to everyone.
I have to say, I thought that was a lovely idea when I first came across that, you know, it doesn't. If you can't afford it, as you say, you're not going to say, well, I'm not helping you then. You know, that really touched me, the fact that you want to help people. You know, you don't just want their money, but you really want to help people.
Absolutely. And, you know, the book is self-published. I don't have an advertising budget, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so grateful and appreciative of the opportunities that people like yourself have been giving me to get the word out about the book. You know, I mean, I'd love nothing more. Let's just put it this way. Once Oprah's read the book and fallen in love with it, I won't charge for any of the consultations, no matter how long they are.
Yeah. Well, you know, because I came into contact with you through Twitter, and she's a fellow Twitterer, so you never know.
You never know. You never know. And but yeah, and so, I mean, I wish I was in a position to just full time, you know, talk to people and, you know, give the money all to shelters and stuff. I'm nowhere near that kind of a position. But at the same time, you know, I mean, who can't afford to, you know, talk to someone for a half an hour?
Oh.
You know, and so, yeah, I've definitely been in a position myself where I was not in a financially able to partake, you know, to get the help I needed in different arenas. And so I definitely, when I set that all up on the blog, it was even in contrary to some people who are in, you know, pet business, they said, oh, no, you can't just offer. And I said, no, I have to. Believe me, this is the way this has to be, because too many people have helped me when I haven't been in a position to pay. So
yeah, yeah. As you say, it's all about doing what you can, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. If we all did that, we'd live in a different world, wouldn't we?
Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Thank you ever so much for sharing your story with us, and I'm sure it's going to help a lot of people.
I'm very grateful for all of your interest and time, Julie. I love reading your blog and I love reading your tweets on Twitter. And I'm very grateful for your help in getting the word out about this book. Thank you so much.
I love the hope that Nadine and Button's story offers, and I admire the empowerment she's offering to pet owners. You can find out more at thehealingartofpetparenthood.com and at Nadine's blog, petparenthood.blogspot.com. And Nadine is also on Twitter as Pet Parent Author. I'm sure that somewhere, Buttons is very proud of her mom. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. In June 2009, Jennifer Aniston was voted the celebrity most people would trust their pets with while on vacation.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. The British Kennel Club has been hitting the headlines again, and it seems whatever they do, they can't please all the people all the time.
First, the Kennel Club sent a letter to all German Shepherd breed clubs outlining health worries and threatening to remove challenge certificates in 2012 if there was no improvement in the breed. That would mean German Shepherds could not compete in Kennel Club shows. Breeders are extremely worried that this would lower the value of the pups they produce and say they are being made a scapegoat after pedigree dog health concerns have been highlighted to the public. So, does this mean that the Kennel Club are now welcoming all moves to improve the health of pedigree dogs?
Well, maybe. We'll have to wait and see what they decide about a new strain of Dalmatian. The spotted breed, made so popular by Disney's cartoons and films, are plagued by high uric levels, with almost a quarter of Dalmatians affected by the problem. Enter a new, healthy strain of Dalmatian, visually indistinguishable from the unhealthy one, but genetically different. This new strain was created by crossing a Dalmatian with a pointer, which was actually done in the US in the early 1970s. Since then, the breeders have worked to maintain the health of this outcrossed Dalmatian breed over 14 generations and state their dogs are free from uric acid problems and should be recognized as pedigree dogs. Predictably, breeders of traditional Dalmatians are resisting the recognition of the new strain. So whatever the Kennel Club decide, someone's going to be unhappy. Let's hope it's not the dogs. Now, how old is the oldest dog you know?
Well, the oldest living dog in the world has just had his 26th birthday party. Max is a terrier cross who lives in Louisiana, USA, and his owner says he has had no pampering or special treatment to get him to that age. Apart from mild arthritis and cataracts, Max is healthy and enjoying life. Apparently the secret to his advanced age is his laid-back attitude to life, something we could all learn from.
And from an old dog to a young one, the world's youngest surfing dog, 8-month-old Jack, aboard a terrier from Cornwall in the UK. Jack is always eager to catch some waves and learned his balancing skills on a skateboard before succeeding on a surfboard. Impressively, Jack can ride waves up to 3 feet high and has mastered a hang five, where he walks up and down the board whilst surfing.
Now, from surfing in the sea to surfing the internet. If you're thinking of getting a puppy, do be careful who you buy it from. Potential owners in New South Wales, Australia, have been falling foul of an unscrupulous scheme where they have paid their money over the internet on the promise of their pup being delivered to their house. Only, surprise, surprise, no puppy ever arrives. Fair Trading has become involved, and they advise against giving money or your bank details to any company you don't completely trust.
The real issue here is that having a puppy delivered to your door is a huge no-no, and even the offer should be setting alarm bells ringing. If you're after a puppy, you should be able to see it with its parents, or at the very least, its mother. The breeder should be happy to welcome you in and show you all the relevant health tests, and only then should you be thinking about putting a deposit down to secure the dog. The internet can be a great help in researching dog breeds and locating your ideal breeder, but it's not the place to actually buy your dog.
And, of course, the best use of the internet is for accessing Dogcast Radio. That's all from us on the news desk. Goodbye.
I think dogs are the most amazing creatures. They give unconditional love. For me, they are the role model for being alive. Gilda Radner. When you go on a vacation, what arrangements do you make for your pets? Hiring a pet sitter is one option. Nina Cole runs a pet sitting business in the UK called Nina's Nannies for Pets, and she talked to me about what it's really like to be a pet sitter and how the business came about in the first place.
Well, in 1997, I was actually doing a bit of reception work, and I decided to start Nina's Nannies for Pets. It was a bit of a brainwave, actually, because I've worked with animals for most of my adult life, and I just thought it would be nice to get out of the office and get some fresh air.
Yeah, excellent. And that's grown from there.
It has really, yes. I started out me on my own and just sort of doing visiting in the local area, caring for people with cats and caged animals. And then after a few months, the work was so intense that I had to get some help. So my husband, that was actually studying at Hertfordshire University, left, and we became a partnership in 1998.
Right. Okay, so, I mean, obviously, when we go on holiday, that's one of the options we have is taking on a pet sitter. So what kind of services do you actually offer?
Right, well, we have two types of services. I would say the main body of our work is live-in care. That's for people with animals such as dogs, obviously including cats and small animals. But with dogs, you cannot see them on a visit basis. So we have people that are essentially retired professionals that will come and stay in your home, providing home security and allowing your dogs to keep their routine and eating habits whilst you're away.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you're saying it is a job that sort of a lot of people think, oh, that would be a great job, but it can be quite difficult, can't it?
Absolutely, extremely difficult. We've actually got a couple at the moment who's on a 6-week sit. They unfortunately, when they attended the pre-visit, they only got to meet one dog. But because two families were actually combining a holiday together in Spain, the other dog wasn't actually presented to them until an hour before the family left.
Oh,
now, 3 days into the sit, they've discovered that these two female dogs detest each other. So I think in total, they've already broken up two particularly nasty fights. But I have to say, they're very, very experienced people and they're coping admirably.
Yeah. Oh, dear. So it's not all fun and games, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, we do try to get together at Christmas, and believe you me, there's some very funny tales to be told at our Christmas get-togethers.
Well, I think you'll have to tell us some of your funny tales then now.
Okay, well, one that immediately springs to mind is one of our couples was on a sit during high summer, so they were having lunch in the garden with the two dogs. It was a particularly large garden surrounded by a high hedge.
And the next thing they knew, a cow's head had actually popped through the hedge, followed by its body and about five others. So they were frantically trying to find out who the farmer, you know, who they belonged to, so that they could contact them and get the cows removed and the hedge mended.
Oh, dear. Cows, they're not part of the job description, are they?
Absolutely not. Although, having said that, we have had occasions where our sitters have attended a pre-visit, and just as they were about to leave, the client just sort of threw into the conversation, "Oh, we've actually got a few sheep at the bottom of the garden, and we wondered if you could just look in on them from time to time."
Oh, crikey. Wow. And any other funny stories?
Well, we had one of our sitters that was caring for a St. Bernard dog. Now, he was actually told by the client that this dog liked to sleep in the bedroom, which he had no problem with at all. But when the dog proceeded to climb into bed with him, I think he felt that was a little bit too much.
And you're not going to argue with a St. Bernard, are you, Ellie?
Absolutely not, no. I think he was sort of woke up each morning with saliva all over his head, but he said he was good fun.
Oh, you certainly keep you warm.
Well, the thing is, as a pet sitter, you learn to take these little oddities in your stride. And on the whole, we've got a fabulous team of pet sitters, and each person enjoys their job thoroughly.
Yeah. Now, obviously, it's a huge responsibility when people ask you to look after their animals, their dogs, you know, whatever they are. And you were saying there's a lot that people can do to make sure they get the best from their pet sitter.
Yes, absolutely. The first thing you need to ensure is that whoever you employ to care for your pets and your homes has registration. Now, the English registration is NARPS, which is the National Association of Registered Pet Sitters. Now, we did used to belong to NARPS when we started, but because they provide your insurance, we found that they don't actually cover you for the care of horses and livestock, or when you work overseas. So this is why we changed to PSI, which is Pet Sitters International, and that is a body that covers the whole of the world. It's a worldwide organisation. You should also ensure that anybody that stays within your home has a police background check, and they are covered by public liability insurance.
Yeah.
The other thing that we go to great lengths not to do is advertise our service on any of the vehicles which our sitters are travelling. Because if you do that, obviously, on the visiting side, you're advertising that clients are actually away and the property is unoccupied.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that.
You have to think of everything in this job, believe you me, Julie.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you've got it covered. From the pet owner's point of view, you know, what's the best approach for them to take with the pet sitter?
In what respect?
Well, I mean, you know, if you've got quite a difficult dog, you know, some people might think, well, I won't tell them everything just in case it puts them off.
Yes, well, this is something that our sitters really do have to account for when they go to a pre-visit. Now, the pre-visit is really important. It's an opportunity for the client to meet their prospective sitter and to take instruction. So they need to know dietary requirements, veterinary details, if your dog is afraid of thunder, if they can be a little bit dog aggressive. And you must be honest with your sitter, because, you know, if you toddle off on your holiday and then get a call the next day to say that, you know, your dog's been seriously injured in a dog fight, you know, this can be the problem if the client is not honest, as is the case in the sit I just mentioned.
Yeah, Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, as you say, these are professional people that are, you know, animal lovers that want to do the best job. So you've got to give them the information that will help them do that, haven't you?
Absolutely. And this is why, as I say, the pre-visit is really essential. And from the time of the first phone call, we try and ensure that sitters meet with clients within at least a week.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're really up to date, aren't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you are looking for more people to be live-in sitters, aren't you?
Yes, we are. Now, the majority of our sitters are retired professionals. Some are on their own and some work in couples. We currently cover the south of England at the moment, and we go up as far as Norfolk and Lincolnshire. So we're looking from people from those areas that do have experience with domestic pets. I would say that we do thoroughly check our sitters, and we would ask them to provide a police background check for obvious reasons, because they're going to be staying within people's homes.
Yeah.
We also ask that any prospective sitter is a non-smoker and they have their own transport. Now, transport's essential to attend the pre-visit, and also if an animal falls sick within their care, so then they can get immediate veterinary treatment.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and I've forgotten the most important thing, which is a good sense of humour.
It sounds like you need it.
You do. You really do.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think we've covered sort of most things there. Is there anything else that you want to say?
No, I think that's it. If anybody would like to go on to Google and do a search for us, we can be found at www.ninas, which is N-I-N-A-S, nannies, N-A-N-N-I-E-S, Four Pets, and it's F-O-R, not the figure four, fourpets.co.uk. I know it's a mouthful, but my name's Nina, and it made sense to call
yes.
the business Nina's Nanny's Four Pets.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, we'll put a link onto that. And you're on, this is how I met you, through Twitter, aren't you? You're on Twitter.
That's right, yes. And it's been, I would say, anybody out there that hasn't used Twitter yet, get Twittering, because I got to meet lovely people like yourself.
Yeah, yeah, it is good, isn't it? And there's a whole community of dog lovers on there.
It is, and the one thing I would say is we really do strive to help animal welfare. And you'll see from our website that greyhounds at the moment are desperately in need of rehoming. And I don't know if you've seen on Twitter that the RSPCA and Dogs Trust are doing quite a lot with greyhound welfare at the moment.
Right, okay. I'll have a look at that as well, yeah. Good. I mean, they're beautiful dogs, aren't they, greyhounds?
Oh, they are, and people will see if they visit my website that I actually did a radio broadcast. It was Blackberry Farm RSPCA down in Aylesbury, and the amount of greyhounds, lurcher crosses that are still languishing in rescue, it's so terribly sad, and they make wonderful, wonderful pets.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Nina, it sounds like you're doing a great job looking after other people's pets. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Julie. Bye-bye.
Amount of time it takes for a dog to do its business is directly proportional to outside temperature plus suitability of owner's outerwear. Betsy Kanyas Garman. I have a confession. I'm afraid of wasps and bees. Wherever I am, whatever situation I'm in, the merest hint of a buzz will have me screaming, jumping up and running away. My human companions, at best, view this with amusement, and at worst, exasperation. But my dogs perceive my very genuine panic and arrive on the scene at top speed, ready to lend assistance. I never fail to be touched that they have heard my cries for help and have responded to them as best as they can. Buddy stands near me, alert, staring around, trying to detect who he should protect me from. Star emits staccato barks, interspersed with a deep, throaty growl, surprisingly low and loud for such a small dog, which is definitely her saying, "I mean business, don't even think about messing with me." Of course, By this point, the bee, wasp or fly is long gone, and I have to sheepishly explain to them that it was yet another false alarm, and I have disturbed their peaceful snoozing for no good reason. This they take in good part, and are rewarded with a dog treat for their trouble. However, they always run to me on red alert the next time this scenario plays out. They don't get fed up with me. They don't think, oh, it'll be nothing again, ignore it. And they don't display impatience. They simply know that I need support, and they offer it. Unfailingly, they turn up to defend me time after unnecessary time. I suppose dogs don't know the story about the boy who cried wolf, or in my case, wasp. Don't forget to enter our Ziggy the Painting Dog competition. You can hear the interview with his owner, Elizabeth Monacelli, in episode 91 of Dogcast Radio, and have the chance to win a portographed T-shirt and a set of postcards featuring Ziggy's work. You've still got time to answer the question. In our interview, how many paintings does Elizabeth say Ziggy has completed so far? And you can email the answer to competition@dogcastradio.com. And the winner will be chosen at random and announced in our September show, as well as on Ziggy's blog. Good luck! Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What did the dog say to the candle? Are you going out tonight?